You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City
for
right
more.
Here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Hello again, friends, and happy 250th. Thank you for all your support, and thanks for hanging in there with us while we sort out a new podcast system for like the fifth time in the history of this show. But we hope it is our last. Anyhow, you are in the right place. This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club, and I am your host, John, and with me, as always, joined by the voice of Minneapolis City Game Day, the Nate Morales. Nate, how am I sounding on the ones and twos on your end?
Not bad, not bad, man. The, what is this, riverside.fm? I don't even know. Whatever
Spotify for podcasters decided to turn into and was like, your shit's gonna get
it sounded
canceled.
Good. It's feeling good. 250 snuck up on me, man.
Yeah, it did.
I knew, you know, I felt 200, but 250, it's a surprise.
Yeah, we had an extravaganza for 200.
We did. This feels like a letdown, but that's all right. We still have quite the mix of content on this week to get to talk about. First of all, of course, the announcements of this year's crop of crows. They keep rolling in, so we're going to cover some recent players that the club has announced. Also, the USL2 schedule has been out for a while. We haven't really talked about it, so we want to start the breakdown and start getting into some predictions. And then I'm going to just let John rant about what the heck the U.S. Open Cup is turning into.
Oh, dude, can't wait. But before we start, Nate, our guy, former Crow, Loic Massanvi, has been quite the popular fella the past few weeks. It hit the news during preseason that Loic had actually joined the first team in preseason training in Arizona. Did we talk about that? I don't remember if we did or not, but we might have just kind of glazed over it.
Yeah.
But he's technically a contracted full-time member of the second team, which there were some pictures online today on Twitter, I think, of a bunch of guys training. We don't know who they are. So they have a team. So that's
the second team? Yeah. I think Pacheco's back.
I think so, but I don't know.
Otherwise, that's it. I got him.
I saw a picture of Rory.
Yep, him, yep. Rory of the week.
The funny thing is I think Loic's training with the first team again because he wasn't in any of the pictures. You'd think they would show him. And then it was Fred, for sure, and
Fred's
and
back
Rory.
Too.
It was Fred and Rory, and then a bunch of guys I didn't know. So anyways, we'll figure that out. But technically, Loic is still a member of the second team. And after scoring one of their lone three goals in preseason, he did just enough to be brought into the full first team fold, having his contract elevated for the Loons' first two games of the season, which saw him make his home debut at Allianz last weekend versus Columbus Crew. And before I let you loose, Nate, I just want to say this. How stupid does it make U.S. soccer or soccer in our country look and sound when news hits the airwaves that the senior team has made like a one-day purchase of their own player for a game when it's one of their reserve players? I mean, it kind of makes no sense, right?
It makes as much sense as Gam and Tam.
Yeah, totally does. Okay, Nate, your thoughts on how things went for our buddy Loic this far in his two cameo stints on the field for the proper Loons?
Yeah, so I'll start with this. This would never have happened under Adrian Heath and Manny,
absolutely zero chance,
right? And I guess you can say, oh, Manny's still there, but he's like in the basement next to the furnace with the red stapler at this point. So I mean, nope. this would never have happened last year for a guy like Loic to get this chance this early, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting because it's clearly, you know, to me, maybe it's not, maybe I'm wrong, but to me it looks like it's all related to the system that mm-hmm. the coach wants to play, right? It's kind of a reversal of how Padelford got his minutes near the end of last season. It's like, you know, last season we needed to add some defense and make sure that we could close games out. This season, it's this high press system. It lends itself to a guy like Loic getting minutes. It's just like, get in there and run, kid.
Well, I think that from a system perspective, the way they're set up, like, I don't necessarily see Loic, you know, he put on tons of muscle. If you noticed,
yeah.
He's jacked.
Look at those
compared
legs
to what he was, you know, a year and a half ago. He's put on quite the muscle, but I think the system of putting him out on the wing actually doesn't lend to his strengths that we've seen over the course of what, three and a half years. And, mm-hmm. you know, certain members of the club have seen him for even longer than that. I think with how they play, he actually might be more effective in what he does, which is score goals and find pockets of space to score goals in a two forward system.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that lends itself to my next point, Johnny. I mean, he gets in there and you can see that he's focusing on what he does right, which is, like you just said, you find dangerous areas, you look to make something happen. And even from the left wing, he does it better than he was better than Caden Clark in that game,
much better.
Regard. But like Loic, Caden is also not really a left wing.
Yeah, to his credit.
Both guys just getting put out there a little bit out of position, just asked to burn. Right. Just to make mm-hmm. sure you're pressing, make sure you use up your energy, work as hard as you can. And you can see that Loic is learning, right? He needs to complete his game still, mm-hmm. which is totally understandable and fine. You know, he was on my side of the field at that home game. And so early on in his shift, I was watching as he's getting chewed out by Hassani Dotson for not pressing with enough intensity in the moment. You can just hear him be like, get the F up there on that guy. Right. It's like, wow, that's pretty scary.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Right. So, and it's like, well, that's true, Loic. That's what you're up there for. I mean, end of the game needs to be closed. You got to press the guys. Otherwise, just kind of hanging back and waiting for them to pass into you isn't going to work. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it's awesome to watch him get the call. It's awesome to watch him learn and contribute. The fact that he almost scored that phenomenal volley. I think that keeper just got lucky to get down enough. But that was great. I'm sure eventually he's going to go down to the MLS Next Pro team again as we get back to full strength. Bongi comes back, Reynoso comes back, Lude comes back. I mean, even Sangbin's job isn't secure on the wing. So yeah. Right. But in the immediate future, John, he seems like he's doing everything he can to make sure that he either stays up as long as possible or comes back up when the time is right, maybe for a late season run.
Well, I did my due diligence on the rules, Nate. And a player in Loic's position, being one, you know, I'm doing air quotes here, homegrown,
mm-hmm.
and two, being a full contracted employee of the second team or the reserve team, he actually only has the opportunity to be called up four times until they have to make a decision to sign him full time. So like
in a season, in a single season?
In a season, yeah. So... Then you start to think about it. Like he really is an emergency ad right now. And for a coach that is almost 2 feet fully out the door.
Yeah. Unfortunately, because he's doing a great job.
Yeah. Right. And what did we talk about a year ago with how Cam Knowles was setting up the second team? And we talked to Rory O'Driscoll at halftime of one of the matches. Where he was watching his brother Aiden play up in the booth. Nordo and I were talking to him, and we talked about that. And he said that, you know, it is a totally different atmosphere from the first team to the second team because of the head coach. Mm-hmm. And you have a guy 2 feet out the door, basically. Loic coming up because he's a known commodity to a guy who's already out the door, who's just trying to do his best and audition for his next thing, or maybe even audition to keep the second team and then really truly only be a caretaker of the first team. Who knows what that's going to look like once the head coach does come in. But if you're looking at it down to brass tacks and on paper, there's only other two more opportunities that Loic can come up with the first team unless they see enough of him that they want to keep him there. But you would hope that the organization and the new president of soccer and a mixture of Amos, like they understand that his best role really is to get minutes and not sit on the bench.
Yeah, hopefully, right? And like you got to be judicious in where you choose to in what situation you choose to bring him up again. Mm-hmm. And like you said, hopefully it's to get minutes, right? It's not to be a Fred Emmings and just kind of hang out.
Yeah, I think we're done with that chapter, but hey, you never know. Hopefully. Weirder things have happened. But on to things that are not weird.
Well, real quick, like we said, John, real quick, when we were talking about the regime change in the front office at MNUFC, like this is a guy coming in that knows how to develop young talent, or from mm-hmm. a group, you know, from a business model that knows how to develop young talent at least. So hopefully there's going to be some philosophy changes here.
Ben, I think that the interview that I saw with Khalid El-Ahmad, the question was asked by City's own fan favorite, MJ, with Northland Soccer.
MJ Matsui?
Yep. He asked the question about the youth. And the answer that came from the top guy was, if you're 16, 17, or 25, and you're good enough, and you get the opportunity, and you seize it, the opportunity is yours. So that right there, even if it was just lip service, it was lip service that we hadn't heard in the past. Yeah. So refreshing. Definitely good to hear if you're a Loons fan. But anyways, back to our reality. It's that time of year, folks, when across the lower league land, teams are making their sales pitches to talented players from all walks of life and have begun building the framework of what the summer roster will look like. And we are no different. After the addition of a familiar face to most, maybe a new face to some or a new name to some, Max Kent was introduced to kick things off with a bang, in my opinion. We're going to sign someone, bring Max Kent back, who we had on the show two episodes ago. If you want to go back and listen to that. The club has introduced five more players to the murder. So why don't we dive in and talk a little bit about the guys that are going to run for the Crows this year?
Yeah, I'd love to. And this, you know, we'll keep adding to this list and covering off on them as they get announced, hopefully talk to a few of them. But, you know, there was kind of a bunch of them announced. And so let's touch him. First one, Jameson Charles. He's a center midfielder that should be familiar to most people if you have followed the Crows the last couple of years. He's a senior at the University of North Carolina, which is impressive in its own right, playing for that program.
Yeah, and I think what's even more impressive is we talk about, you know, a legacy player like Max Kent coming back into the fold. Jameson Charles has been with Minneapolis City for, this will be his fifth season. So if you think it, like that's a long time being with a lower league club when you're not in something like the NPSL, when there are no age restrictions. So being one of the players that gets it and has been here is really good to see. And he's had a rough college career searching for minutes, and it's tough going to an ACC school like North Carolina, ACC, right? Yeah. And the fact that, you know, with the transfer portal, guys like Jameson, who were standouts in high school, you know, state player of the year, Gatorade player of the year, things like that, they're kind of second tier citizens when it comes to the college game these days, because of the fact that you're getting guys transferring maybe every year without recourse. You're getting guys from Europe. So it's been a rough go for Jameson to get those minutes. He did see an uptick in featuring in 12 games this past year as a senior. When he is with us, you can see he really is that heartbeat type of center midfielder. You know, he goes box to box, constantly has energy. I think the distribution side of things when he had the ball is where at times maybe let him down a little bit, but the energy that he provides when he comes onto the field is something that we just don't have in other players. And like I said, a veteran to the club that understands how we do things. He understands the lower league nature of who we are. And even though he's a quiet individual, like he could be leaned on by the coaching staff or the other players in the locker room to be a support system for maybe new guys that are coming in.
Yeah, it has been kind of a head scratcher to me, John, why he hasn't seen the field more for the Tar Heels. But like you said, in today's NCAA, especially some of those highly competitive conferences, you know, you're seeing a lot more guys coming over from Europe as 21-year-old freshmen, right?
Right.
Like shooting straight into the team. So tough for Jameson, but you're right. When he's here, it's great to see him on the field. And I'd say he's more of a traditional, defensively, I think sometimes his game lets him down, but the guy works. I mean, he is up and down. He's so box to box, and the work rate is there. So it's great to see him on the field. And like you said, he really is the heartbeat when he's out there.
Yep, absolutely.
Up next, another center midfielder that I'm excited to see because we didn't see a lot of him last year is Robbie Buzikovic, the Bazooka.
The Bazooka.
Just finished his junior year at St. Olaf, right?
Yeah, and he's in his second season with the Crows. And as most people who listen to the show know, fresh off a national title with St. Olaf. And throughout that season, he featured in every single game, started every single game for the Olies and Justin Oliver. He was the United Soccer Coaches All-Region First Team. He was MIAC Rookie of the Year two seasons ago. He was all MIAC last season, MIAC Playoff Most Valuable Player, and MIAC All Playoff Team. So comes with some accolades, which he continued to add to from his first two seasons at St. Olaf. His first season with us, though, was cut short due to injury. And, you know, I think he only featured in two matches. And when you look at the player like Jameson, the high-energy player, Robbie is not that high-energy player. He can play with energy, but he is more your traditional standstill, ball-winning defensive center midfielder with the passing range. And he does have the mobility to cover ground, but traditionally he's more of the organizer and then the one who is in the right place at the right time instead of having to use his athleticism like someone like Jameson needs to at that defensive center midfield role that then has to empty the tank, maybe doing some recovery back runs, where Robbie will sit in a spot and he'll get forward when he knows it's right, but he's going to be in the right place at the right time, which is something that I think that we historically need that center midfielder who does sit. We haven't really had someone like that since Ian Smith, who is the connector between the back line and will help with limiting the numbers problems that happen when teams get more direct on us because he is a ball winner in the air as well.
Yeah, I think you and I both like a player like that, right? It's nice to have maybe in a two deep system or like maybe if you're playing a 6 and 8 and a 10, you know, Jameson can maybe play more of that 8 role and you can have someone like Robbie back there to do those things, especially now that we know that Giracci is flexible and can be, you know, when he's at center back, you're going to need someone to replace that, replace what he does too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Also, the Bazooka, dude, it's real. The guy's got a leg.
I like how we just coined that nickname for him and it has nothing to do with anything.
I love it. I think I brought it up. I think I said it on stream when I was announcing for Augsburg too. We're going to make it happen.
Gotta have legs.
Yep. All right. Up next is a new member, I guess a returning member of the Goalkeeper's Corner. It is Gabe Cuffell. He's a junior out of Xavier.
And Gabe is another player who's in his second season with the Crows. So we're starting to see a running theme here of players returning, which is great, right? That's kind of the focus where we do know that there's going to be some attrition year over year with players either moving on to other USL2 teams, maybe closer to college, maybe going on the directive of a head coach saying you need to go to a certain program to play. We've seen it happen before, but we always do tend to seem to see players return, whether it's after that gap year without playing with us or going back for consecutive seasons. Gabe's another player that didn't see much action in his college at Xavier. He's in a really deep goalkeeping room, and it seems like every year he's there, they're bringing in another European goalkeeper. So that's got to be tough. Year one with the Crows was, I think, his kind of chance to feel out the club seeing less game minutes, but being involved in the program at a younger age. And the differentiator I see with Gabe, with some of the other goalkeepers, and I don't mean this for them to take it the wrong way, but Gabe's more of a thinker between the sticks. Like, his positioning is 9 times out of 10 the right positioning, where he doesn't have to necessarily rely on the athleticism that he does have. I'm not saying he's got concrete feet, but he tends to always think one step ahead, reading the play, which is really nice. And it's something you can't teach a young goalkeeper. They just kind of have to have that. So I'm looking for Gabe this season to now know what it takes and look to then push for another more opportunities in the net.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. He was last year, I think he was on the short end of a rough trip to Racine to round out the season, right? He got some minutes and he got shellacked. And so just like you're saying, I think he's going to need to apply the lessons that he has learned about how to contribute in a deep goalkeeper room to this summer and be as ready as possible when called upon and prove that he's got something to offer.
We've talked to many goalkeepers throughout this 250 episode history here, and it's difficult for those guys because it's not like you can go, you know, you're a traditional, you know, attacking center midfielder and you can go and play the wing, or you can go play, you know, drop back a level. There's only one guy in net, and I know we were having some roster conversations with the coaching staff and just talking about the depth that we have at goalkeeper, and you have to have that communication with guys like a Gabe to tell them what the landscape looks like. You know, like, you're in here for either, from a goalkeeping perspective, to either be a training player and fill in when needed, or you are the number two, or you're the number one. So it's got to be tough for goalkeepers. I don't envy that position for a lot of reasons, but that is one that I would find difficult.
Yeah, I guess, you know, those kind of conversations could be refreshing, I suppose, to like know exactly where you stand. It'd be nice to know the system.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Up next, John, is a guy that we're familiar with. We talked to his brother. It's Nick Kent.
Yeah, he's 50 episodes ago. You go back.
Yeah,
you can hear Nick Kent talk about coming up with the club, but
yeah, Nick wrapping his junior year at McAllister.
Excuse me, Nick is fresh off an all MIAC selection, so getting some additional accolades as well. He's a homegrown product that has moved through our system. He was in the original Futures class, and then ultimately the Futures class last year. Injury shortened his summer season with the UPSL, but when he was in action, absolutely rock solid. We talked to his brother Max. They are related, so it's not just a coincidence that two guys have the same last name. And we talked about how it's the chance for them collectively to play next to each other, which is a new thing for them. But also we talked to Max about how they do offer different things, and Max is hoping to help, you know, his younger brother continue to grow. Also, maybe, you know, Anson while he's walking out of the locker room, you know, be the bigger brother. But he's a do-it-all center back. He's really good in the air. He's good with his feet. His distribution is really good from a passing perspective. I think he can lock down larger target forwards. We saw him do that as a teenager against Pablo Campos, former you know, NASL MVP and Minnesota United player. Yeah. Although a little bit older, still a massive human being who knows the game of soccer. He showed he can do that. And he also showed that he is quick enough to also compete in one-on-ones with speedy wingers. So sometimes you get that center back gets drawn out and you're like, this guy's on an island, you know, he's going to sink. And Nick's not that defender. So he really is, you know, a player that, I do it all center back. And I'm going to be really excited to see what the combination of the Max Nick looks like together, but also just how Nick's going to perform making that jump from the Futures up into the first team.
Yeah. He didn't really appear until later in the UPSL season last year, but he was a big reason that we were able to lock down the Midwest West and advance to that game against, I think it was Wichita, right? Mm-hmm. And like you said, it'll be interesting to see how the Kent if they appear together, how the Kent hive mind works.
Yep.
Just that dynamic is going to be super, super fun. Up next, John, another guy we didn't, well, this is a guy that we didn't really see on the field at all last year, but comes with a lot of pedigree, a lot of accolades. It's Joe Highfield, who yep. is, I guess, kind of a attacking center mid slash forward combination, real tall, redshirt freshman, currently at Portland University.
Yeah, and Portland University is another one of those universities that leans heavily on the international transfer. So he's definitely one of those players that I think is kind of fallen. You know, he's young, so redshirting his freshman year was probably a smart thing to do. But you know, second year with the Crows, last year, much like Gabe, kind of that training year to get the experience and really to face players day in and day out in training that he's going to be facing and gain that experience for college. And then ultimately in our system 4 years, like we're hoping that breakout year that we have our fingers crossed is going to happen this year. He was a former Minnesota High School Player of the Year. And like you mentioned, he's a tall guy, goes 6'4". And we haven't really had one of those big bodied targets up top really since Nils was in the fold. But you can deploy him, like we talked about, as maybe a withdrawn striker, like a false nine. He can go out on the wing. He has the athleticism and the speed to play on the wing or to be deployed as a target man using his size. I really do think that he needed a year of growth moving from youth soccer to adult soccer. So, you know, I do like the fact that the coaching staff didn't necessarily thrust him into action. I maybe would have liked to see an opportunity with him maybe at the futures level last year, but again, injuries kind of cut things short. And then he did leave early to go to school. You know, we've seen that happen before in the past where a lot of guys will go early when they're younger, hit the weight program in the off season, maybe take a summer class and really be training every day where their forever home really is.
Huh. Yeah, John, I think this is a kid I'm going to need to see more of. I saw him his senior year in the state final when he was with Wayzata, but that was about it. And, you know, I tried to watch, you know, he's redshirted. So you didn't really see him. I didn't really see him. You didn't see him at all on the field for Portland. So again, like you said, he's a guy that's been around mostly for just to be groomed, like to get ready, right, for this next level. So it's just interesting to me that this is a guy that Carl and the coaching staff, the organization has pinpointed as like, here's someone we need to grab and get him into the fold and get him ready to be the future of, you know, one of the future Crows. And so hopefully yeah. he can see some minutes and show us why they've got the faith in him.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think, you look at the landscape of the conference, we're going to be talking about that here shortly. You know, you look at a player like Nathan Donovan, the striker for St. Croix, like yep. his first, if you saw him in his progression of where he was at before he entered college at Eau Claire, and then what we saw last summer with him using his size and speed to really dice us up in certain scenarios. I think he scored 2 goals against us in the game where they were they played here, played at home at Edward Nelson. Essentially, same type of player, same type of progression. So I'm really looking forward to hoping that is the next level step up that Joe's going to take.
Yeah, I hope so. And these are just the players that have been announced so far. I know that Carl and MVB and you and the rest of the coaching staff have some more announcements up your sleeve. And you're also hard at work hitting the pavement to bring more talent into the fold this summer. So stay tuned, everyone. Stay tuned right here for analysis as more USL2 players are announced. And then, geez, we don't know. What do we have? We've got another month before we hear about the UPSL players. It's going to get crazy. So many players.
So many players.
Well, buried in between all those player announcements and U.S. soccer drama was something that the planners in our fan base will have been hungry for, and that is the USL2 schedule. It was released, and there are plenty of talking points to be had across the board. We'll just run through the schedule really quickly, high level. We open the season away at Milwaukee May 18th. Can't we return home for a little run May 22nd against St. Croix and May 29th, Memorial Day weekend, against Racine. Then away June 1st, quick turnaround, June 1st at Rochester. So not like we're traveling very far, which is nice. And then June 5th, we'll welcome Thunder Bay. So a little bit of fixture congestion there, as the MLS likes to say, in the early part of June. Then we've got June 13th with a road trip to Racine. We'll welcome Milwaukee Bavarians back home June 15th. And then we'll turn around and go back to Milwaukee June 21st. June 29th, Rochester will come to Eudora Nelson Field. 4th of July weekend, July 5th. I guess it's not a weekend, it's middle of the week. July 5th, traveling to Thunder Bay. And then July 12th, my birthday, Thunder Bay comes to visit us. And we will round the season out July 14th at St. Croix. So, first things first, John, the most obvious bit is that FC Manitoba is no longer with us. I did a quick scouring of the internet, and I found that their youth organization is still very active, but the USL2 club is gonzo. No posts on social since the end of last season. Their USL2 hosted website is empty. So you have to assume that it was us that played them into oblivion.
That or the hailstorm that came during that match.
It's strange that they're just like, we're just not going to do it. Oh, well, I mean, I guess it's probably a money thing.
You know, I don't know. With a thriving youth organization, it might not be a money thing. It could just be a capacity thing or sure. A focus. Maybe they just want to go back to being a youth club, which is okay. It happens.
It is okay.
But what it does, it creates some issues with the schedule. You know, you see that we play Thunder Bay 3 times now, and we play Milwaukee 3 times.
Yeah, so in order to make like up those last games, we got 3 games against each of those guys.
Yep, and you'd like to see that not happen, but for selfish reasons, playing the Bavarians 3 times is probably about as golden of a ticket as I can get.
Yeah, I feel good about that. You know, I think you could be forgiven for thinking that maybe those extra matches balance each other out, though. I don't know, I wouldn't be too quick to assume anything. Like, yep. 3 against Bavarians, 3 against Thunder Bay, you're looking at 3 against the bottom, 3 against the top. It's gonna be, you know, you're just gonna meet in the middle and you'll split them. Who knows? I think last year the Bavarians had that obligatory period of adjustment to the USL2. Not a great season for them. I think they got a couple draws. I'm not sure if they even won a game.
I think they got one.
I'd expect that like us, they've been working very hard to level up and to compete better. So you can't really count them out, especially given that we've got 2 games against them away, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of the coin, as far as Thunder Bay, remember that we shocked the eventual division winners away in Canada. We came away with a frantic point in a crazy 2-2 draw. So I would say, while they are the front runners again, you know that we're going to be looking to build on that result last year against them. And we know that they're vulnerable, as it were. So again, who knows? Looking ahead, May 22nd is that home opener against St. Croix. And this is a team the players know well, the coaches know well, the fans know well, right? They're loading up with very St. Croix-y players. Nathan Donovan, like you mentioned, is back, dangerous as ever. Nick Zukowski going to be pulling the strings at the 10. You got Saddam Stussain. You got the traitor, Luca Contestable. You got Aiden Hillis. You got Dylan Olsen. It's the same old Mayak-level talent. That just play hard. They play hard and they get results, especially against us.
Was Aiden Hillis a Duluth player?
Yes. Good eye, John. Aiden Hillis is a former Duluth player. I believe it was Aiden Hillis that got the red card in the 6-1 game.
Oh, could have.
But I'm not sure. You've got new additions, too, to St. Croix, though. Leo Kane and Perry Bly are some new faces from Liberty University in Virginia.
They're former Minnesota United U19 players, so we faced off against them. And, again, known commodities that we know.
Yeah. So this is one of those matchups, John. It could go either way. even if on paper maybe it shouldn't. St. Croix always plays this hard, and they always seem to, I shouldn't say always, but they have been getting results. So hopefully we can stop that trend. I'm gonna add and throw one bit of pessimism into the mix. Taking a look at the schedule between Racine, we'll start with St. Croix, then it's Racine. We've got Rochester, Thunder Bay, and Racine again, all games before the middle of June, before June 15th. So we've got five really tough games in May and June. Last year, that's how long it took us to really gel. You know, the team didn't really string some results together until the end of June, beginning of July. So if we don't pick up where last season left off, it could be a real brutal first half of the summer.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I will add some optimism to your pessimism. And
you?
If you look at, well, I've seen the roster. So I don't feel that there's going to be as much of a learning curve this year. We've already started and announced a group of players that have one way, shape, or form already been with the club, and they're known talents to us in-house and to people outside of the house. So I feel like that, coupled with the reality expectations that now Carl Craig as our head coach can have at being in this league for now a second season, understanding that things are a little bit different from where he came from, and he has to course correct as a manager, but also we have to course correct as how we build a roster for him. So seeing that we have a lot of talent coming back, I don't feel that the potential of the gel period taking as long as it did last time. We all know that during our successful run of years in the MPSL, the cohesion and the gel and the brotherhood is what kind of took us over the edge against some teams that maybe had, you know, in certain seasons, better talent. There were plenty of those Duluth teams and even some of the Med City teams. Almost said Rochester, but you knew where I was going there.
Yep.
I felt that they actually had more talent on field talent than we did, but we had the opportunity to have that gel period early. So I don't think it's going to be the same as that was, but I do feel like we're potentially going to be in a situation where these other teams are going to be feeling themselves out as well. So maybe that's where we can start to snag some points instead of dropping them.
That would be phenomenal.
That'd be great.
Quit feeling yourselves, other teams.
Yeah. Matt, you've said grooming, touching, and feeling in the same episode. So we're going to have to start to ask questions here, Nate. All right, so on to other news, our final topic of the night, the U.S. Open Cup. So where to begin, Nate?
Man. I know you.
It's no surprise that a piece of me died when in 2017 the goalpost moved on us and we were kicked out of the U.S. Open Cup after moving leagues during an off season. Which, by the way, here's a little bit of history for you. Our spot was taken by then PDL side, the Dayton Dutch Lions, which is where I was born. Oh. and then, so they took our vacated spot, and then they have morphed into the Chicago Dutch Lions, which is in the USL2. So
yeah.
There you go, a little bit of history. But anywho, that was where this tournament, I feel, started to go downhill from a soccer purist's perspective, like I am. With twists and turns on the rules, bending the knee to the MLS complaining about lower league playing surfaces being not up to par, fixture congestions, which albeit were created by themselves, and many, many other things that the MLS has complained about that have led to where we currently are today. And I could go on and on, but all the while all this was happening, us as a soccer club, we would qualify when we would qualify, and we would continue to bump up against all odds and be a willing participant in this tournament because of the history of the tournament, the magic that surrounds it, and it being kind of a hitching post for amateur soccer clubs, and it being the world's second longest running or oldest domestic soccer competition in the world. So a lot of that is, it's just really sad to me that the entity that is U.S. Soccer and MLS has come in and completely torn it apart, and then and torn it apart, and then tried to just kind of walk away from it.
Yeah,
and you're going to get into kind of what's happening, but we briefly ranted about this a few weeks ago, but if you fast forward 8 years later, and I think Nate, we've kind of hit rock bottom with the U.S. Open Cup, and it is sad because I think it could be an opportunity for so much more, but the almighty dollar that is held firmly in the grasp of Major League Soccer is going to do whatever it can to make sure that it does not have legs for some weird, I think, petty reasons, I think, to be honest.
Yeah, petty, cowardly reasons. I think you got it, man. If you don't know, only 8 MLS first teams are going to be participating this year. I think Houston is the defending champ, and then I'm not sure why the other 7 decided either they could or they should.
They moved their MLS 2 teams in, so that was kind of the I don't know, the compromise, I guess if you could call it that. The winner from last year and then these other teams would participate. Yeah. And then the others would put in their second team.
Yep. And so the other one is they're putting in their MLS Next Pro. And like DC United doesn't have one of those, so they're just not playing. and really, John, everywhere you go to read about this or listen to an opinion on this, everyone is laughing at the MLS and U.S. soccer's weak spine. I don't think I've heard or read a single opinion that this is good for soccer in the United States, that this is good for the development of the game, that this is good for any of the clubs that are left to participate, right? Mm-hmm. But who this is good for are the MLS owners, right? And this is the next step, the inevitable marching on of what the fact that people with money can do almost whatever they want in the United States of America. It's the next step in the billionaire MLS owners creating this closed system that first and foremost is a marketing machine, and it's second, a soccer league. They're not really fooling anyone. Like everyone from Sebastian Salazar to Twellman to Ollie Moreno to Winalda, Jeff Reuter, me. I've been saying it for years. I've called the MLS out as being afraid of how the Open Cup could hurt the brand of a team that gets upset. And I'm going to tell you, as exciting as it is to get Messi and Suarez and all those Barcelona boys over here to play for Miami, John, it's the next step. This is the MLS of the future. That's the MLS of the future right there. It's a shinier version of the Saudi League, where your team is signing players in order to sell jerseys, not really to win championships. Miami doesn't win anything this year, nobody's going to give a shit because they got Messi, and how awesome is that?
Well, and here's the thing I'll add to that is that Messi and Suarez aren't going to be around forever. Like you mentioned, like the future of their league is really coming from the grassroots, or it's coming from signing players from outside of the country, which their rules that they built themselves dictate that you can't have a roster of a bunch of transplants. You have to have homegrown, certain amount of homegrown players, certain amount of domestic born players, certain amount of draft picks. Like you have, yeah. Like there's rules on how they build their rosters, and there's rules in most leagues, you know, internationally. You know, England, for example, like, yeah, I think you have to have something like 6 or 7 English born or British born players on your roster. That's why you see players like Harry Maguire and Mason Mount going for large fees, because they have to have those types of players. But then when you look at the MLS, like they really are trying to capitalize more so on the Messi bump. I mean, it's literally everywhere. And mm-hmm. I'm getting to the point now, Nate, where as a soccer purist, like I believe he's the greatest gift that soccer has given the world is from a playing perspective. And it's getting watered down so much by by Americanizing him to the point where, like, I see his face or I see that fucking pink jersey and I'm like, oh God, this again. Then I'm just like, it's so saddening to me because they, as a league, have really gone the wrong way. And the Major League Soccer could be so much more than it really is. And I know that when you're looking at the grand scheme of things, it's a league in its infancy still, because all the other leagues around the world have hundreds of years on Major League Soccer. But with that said, it doesn't have to be the way it is. And if you're on you know the soccer subs of the world, and you saw on Twitter, Dan Vaughn from The Protagonist actually interviewed and did a small article today and put it out with the lawyer who was in charge of running the representing the women's national team in their antitrust lawsuit, and ultimately their fair pay practice lawsuit. And he's also leading the charge in the lawsuit of the NASL versus US Soccer and Major League Soccer. And this is just another crack in the foundation that is so overt that basically tells the story for the opposition of why US Soccer and Major League Soccer are going to lose pretty much every lawsuit they get into around things like this, for people who are willing to pony up the probably very large sums of money to sue them. Mm-hmm. And they're going to just continue to lose. And until there's reform at the highest level in our country from a soccer perspective, it's just going to be more of the same. So I'm really interested in to see what happens with this NASL lawsuit, which was 7 years in the making, mostly due to COVID not being able to go to trial, but it's going to trial in September. So come MLS playoffs, there might be some very significant news around Major League Soccer and US Soccer as a whole. So stay tuned for that.
Well, on that positive note,
yeah,
that's going to do it for this week's show.
Look, God, I want to thank MLS.
I want to send a thanks to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprince.com. Yeah, there's the button bar.
Well, our let's friends. Do one more. One more.
Let's do one more.
Where is it? There it is.
Yeah. Our friends at footballstadiumprince.com are always expanding their soccer-focused t-shirt designs, prints, and more. Hey, don't forget to use the code CROWS10 for 10% off everything you purchase. footballstadiumprince.com. Remember, all U.S. orders ship right here from the States, so there are no pesky international shipping charges. As a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3, so you can feel good that your membership doubles as a charitable donation to a club that does good. Memberships for the 2024 season are on sale now. Make sure you cement your seat in the stands. Get some sweet swag, all for a price that destroys other clubs' prices of entry. John, you just stuffed all the member packets, so those are on their way out.
Honestly, I didn't. Got sick.
You lied to me.
I had all intention to go, and I got sick.
And then I didn't. And then I just didn't go. Head to mplscitysc.com. Get your membership today. And your membership is going to get you tickets to all USL2 home games, all UPSL home games for both the UPSL Premier Division and the other one, U20, the U19s and the U21s. Plus any Minnesota Super Cup home games as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a lot of games, man. It's a lot of games for the price. That's all for this week. I'm Nate. That was John. A lot more player announcements on the way. There's so much more preseason news coming down the road. And we're also going to have an update on how the Futures Winter League is shaping up. So until next time.
Got hoofed.